Hey, this is Nate here to say that this isn't a proper episode. A new episode will be coming during the first week of April. To pull back the curtain here for a second, there's just some boring logistical businessy calendar stuff I'm taking the opportunity here to straighten out. But mostly because I got to travel next week and the week after. On April 12th, I'm going to be doing a live show in Austin, Texas. And if you would like to come to see that show, please go to thememorypalace.us/events for ticket link. It is a good time, I think. And then next week, my daughter and I are going on vacation, and I don't feel like working during that week, so here we are. So there's going to be a new episode next week, but first, I just want to leave you with this. As I was watching the coverage of the March for Our Lives and marching myself in Los Angeles, these are the protests in favor of gun regulations in the United States started by, and in many real ways led by, the students at Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, response to the murders of their friends and classmates and folks who worked in their school. There was this image that kept popping up on social media of a banner that hung, I believe, at the meetings of the National Women's Party, a group here in the United States that fought for women's suffrage, among other causes. The banner is white and weathered now and stitched with blue letters that say, "The young are at the gates." And I had seen it before and I had heard the phrase before, but I guess it had never felt so right. Or at least so righteous. It was coined, the phrase, by Lavinia Dock, who never had to work in her life, but did anyway. Her family was wealthy, she had an allowance and property, and she could have done anything or nothing, but she became a nurse. She helped people. She worked in field hospitals in a yellow fever outbreak in Florida, and another after the Johnstown flood back home in Pennsylvania. She wrote a book, a manual for nurses about medicines. It sold 100,000 copies. She taught at and later was the assistant superintendent for nurses at Johns Hopkins. And then she left and worked at a settlement house in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. It was 1896. The new immigrants crowding the tenements needed their help. And she fell in love with the work and became radicalized. An avowed socialist, picketed with the striking women. They were mostly women who stitched shirtwaists, fighting against the same kind of cruel and dangerous working conditions that would kill 146 people in the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire a year later. She made speeches demanding effective and legal birth control, and she went to jail over and over and over, demanding that women be given the right to vote. There was an international convocation of nurses in Atlantic City after World War II, and the U.S. wouldn't let Soviet nurses attend, and she fired off furious letters to American politicians. She was 89 at the time. Her hearing had long since gone, and she'd been living for a number of years with her five sisters in Pennsylvania. None of them ever married. At one time, when she was older, she was looking back on her life and on the time that she spent in the trenches, fighting for the vote, doing the work when she didn't have to work at all. And she said despite her arrests, including serving a sentence of hard labor in a work camp in Virginia, it was a great joy to do a little guerrilla war in that cause. And during that period, Lavinia wrote an article in The Suffragist, the journal, in the June 30th issue in 1917. And its title, "The Young Are at the Gates," was held up in an entirely different cause 101 years later. And I know I'm not exactly the right person to read this aloud, but I will, and maybe others will. It goes like this. If anyone says to me, "Why the picketing for suffrage?" I should say in reply, why the fearless spirit of youth? Why does it exist and make itself manifest? Is it not really that our social world would be likely to harden and toughen into a dreary mass of conventional negations and forbiddances, into hopeless layers of conformity and caste? Did not the irrepressible energy and animation of youth, when joined to the clear-eyed, sham-hating intelligence of the young, break up the dull masses and set a new pace for laggards to follow? What is the potent spirit of youth? Is it not the spirit of revolt, of rebellion against senseless and useless and deadening things? Most of all against injustice, which is of all stupid things the stupidest. Such thoughts come to one in looking over the field of the suffrage campaign and watching the pickets at the White House and at the Capitol. Where sit the men who complacently enjoy the rights they deny to the women at their gates? Surely nothing but the creeping paralysis of mental old age can account for the phenomenon of American men, lawmakers, officials, administrators, and guardians of the peace, who can see nothing in the intrepid young pickets with their banners, asking for bare justice but common obstructions of traffic, nagger nuisances, that are to be abolished by passing stupid laws forbidding and repressing to add to the old junk heap of laws which forbid and repress? Can it be possible that any brain cells not totally crystallized could imagine that giving a stone instead of bread would answer conclusively the demand of the women who, because they are young, fearless, eager, and rebellious, are fighting and winning a cause for all women, even for those who are timid, conventional, and inert? A fatal error, a losing fight. The old stiff minds must give way. The old selfish minds must go. Obstructive reactionaries must move on. The young are at the gates.